Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. In times like these, we tend to think. We reassess. We look at the bigger picture. Our next segment might help you with that. It's about ritual, faith, and belonging. A poll by the Public Religion Research Institute revealed of those surveyed, about a quarter had no specific religious affiliation, but most still feel connected to something bigger than themselves. But without a roadmap or a guidebook or a prayer book or a lineage of tradition, it can be hard to know how to put that spiritual urge into practice and how to derive meaning from it. Sasha Sagan, a writer, editor, and daughter who grew up in a household that clearly thought about connecting with something bigger than ourselves. She is the daughter of our previous guest, Andrianne and Carl Sagan. Sasha joined us in the fall to discuss her book, For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. I began by asking her about a line from the book's introduction about separating skepticism from pessimism and why that goal was important to her.
I think it's really hard to replace something with nothing. And, you know, for most of history, the infrastructure for how we mark time, how we celebrate, how we get married, how we bury the dead has been religion. And if you're skeptical or you sort of feel spiritual but not religious, you still need ways to do those things.
And you mean by ways, you mean ritual, something, a scaffolding?
Yes, exactly. And something that sort of gives you that sense of a pattern, a rhythm, right? Being part of the world, being part of a community.
The way the chapters are laid out in the book, it's overlapping cycles. So you have the four seasons, and then you have the life cycle, and then weekly, monthly, daily rituals. Why did you decide to organize the book like that?
I think, you know, life is so full of change, and we're constantly trying to process change. Changing of the seasons, like you said, birth, coming of age, death, it's just nonstop, you know? And some of the things are really hard. And some of them are sort of minor, just like, wow, another week went by. That was quick. It was just, you know, or it was just summer a minute ago. And I think that so much of the reason that we have rituals and we've created them for ourselves, religious, secular, you know, spiritual, all variations, is because we need to process these changes. And so I try to lay it out in a way that explores the different changes we're facing constantly.
You write about the power of rituals. So much of ritual is retelling of stories. A philosophy requires more than just a list of things to believe in. So how does a ritual take a list of beliefs deeper?
Well, it's about action, and it's about something you do maybe by yourself very quietly, maybe with your whole community, maybe just, you know, with your three best friends every week. And it makes it something that can sort of allow you to feel time passing, you know, or just wrap your mind around what we're all doing here and these huge questions. And so I think that it's also a story we tell ourselves, and I think that's really important.
And I thought it was really interesting that you focus at one point on the little small rituals. Mm. They don't have to be these giant, enormous, everybody in the community takes part. What is in the power of a small ritual? And can you give people examples?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, even just you make yourself coffee in the morning or your partner makes you coffee in the morning. And it's kind of, when you take a step back from it, this like really astonishing, magical thing that this plant grows in the earth and we harvest it and we make it into this concoction. And it's like transformative. We drink it and suddenly you have the energy to do what you're doing. But anything that you do a specific way because it's meaningful to you and you do it regularly is a ritual in a way. I mean, if you have happy hour with your friends every Thursday, that's a ritual. But it's just, you know, when it's really secular or it feels, you know, kind of not ordained from above, we don't think of it that way.
So in the idea of if you have drinks with your girls every Thursday, it's not just about the drinks.
Right.
It's about showing up for one another. It's about
exactly
what happens during the drinks. It's about sharing your information. It's about supporting one another.
Precisely. And feeling part of a community, which if you're not, you know, if you're not religious, it's really hard sometimes to have a little, you know, congregation, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, there used to be rituals. There are very few. And it's funny. They used to sort of focus around things like the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Or, I mean, there are a few things that are still live events like that, but because the world has become so siloed and splintered mm-hmm. and niche, even the way we take in our entertainment, that there's, you can't really go to the water cooler morning and say, did you see that thing? Because everybody's doing their own thing.
Totally. That's right? So true. When, you know, when people, you know, when there was like appointment television where everyone was watching the same mm-hmm. show every Thursday night and Friday morning, you talk about it, now it's like if someone watched it all, the whole thing in one weekend, you know, it's totally different.
My guest is Sasha Sagan. The name of her book is For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. What does unlikely world refer to?
Well, I think that it's about if you're secular, you know, and you don't feel like everything was planned or designed or created. And it's just kind of, you know, there's a lot of random events that led to you being born or to this moment that we're sitting here having this conversation. Then it's, I think there can be a celebration of random chance and the idea that somehow, you know, you met your person, even though it could have gone a lot of different ways. If you believe in destiny or fate, maybe you think, well, it could have only gone one way. But if you think we're all sort of making our own decisions and there's a lot of luck and chance, I don't know, there's something worth celebrating about the randomness of it.
There is a suggestion for a date that could become a secular holiday that we could all get involved with. You're right. My mother and I have often thought that March 4th would be a good date for such a secular holiday. Explain why March 4th might be a good date.
Well, in English, it's such a good pun, right? It's the only date that also is like a command, like March 4th, you know, go straight forward into something grand and powerful. And I think, you know, a lot of what's really amazing about science and beautiful about science that my parents really instilled in me is this idea that there's an error correcting mechanism and that what we believe today, you know, might be disproven tomorrow if our theories can't stand up to scrutiny. And that's a really good thing because it means we're getting closer to understanding how everything works. And so we sort of have to do that for ourselves, too, and do a little error correction. And, you know, lots of religions have a day where you, or, you know, a ritual where you apologize or you say, hey, look, I was wrong about this. I'm sorry. And I think if you're secular, there's something about March 4th that makes for a really good pun for a day to do that.
But there's also a science element to it.
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, well, there was in, I think it was March 4th, 1953 BCE, so a very long time ago, in ancient China, there was a huge discovery made that totally changed the way that they viewed the layout of the solar system. And then the way that, you know, even in ancient times with no telescopes, but there was a new observation and they corrected what they had previously thought, even though they had very little technology, and they marched forth. It's just so, I mean, they didn't call it March 4th, that date, but I just found that in a footnote of one of my parents' books and thought that was so perfect.
You write the book, you describe it as part memoir, part guidebook, part social history. Okay, let's go through this. The memoir part. Why did you decide? You have a lot of personal stories in here about becoming a mom, about being in, you should describe it, a mixed marriage.
Yeah.
For this topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that my outlook and sort of my philosophy on rituals and being secular and still really finding joy and beauty in the world, and as you said, not wanting to be cynical just because I'm skeptical, really came from the way my parents raised me, and it instilled, you know, these values in me that I take with me, you know, in my relationship, in my being a mom, in my relationships with my friends. And so it was sort of, you know, came naturally that there would be personal elements in the book. And some of the stories I tell, I think, are kind of funny, but a little tongue-in-cheek. And some of them, I think, are, I hope, really, you know, emotional and moving, because I do talk about my dad and losing him at a young age and, you know, everything that I'm very grateful for that I learned from him.
What is the guidebook part of this? What do you hope people can take from it and use as a guide?
Well, in the memoir elements, I sort of give some of the examples in my life that have sort of become rituals. Every person has to figure it out for themselves. And like the stuff that, like, I mean, I tell a story about like a singing cab driver who like really felt strongly that my husband and I should sing every week. And now we sing the alphabet song every Saturday. I'm not saying you guys should all sing the alphabet song every Saturday, but just as an example of something that you can do that brings a little levity and joy and humor and lightness in your everyday life is I think, useful.
And what's the social history aspect of the book?
Well, the more I researched different celebrations, rituals, traditions around the world, I couldn't help but notice that throughout history, different cultures, so often what we're celebrating has the same framework. It's like we talked about, changing of the seasons, birth, coming of age, death. And we have different mythology, different theology, different lore that sort of is involved with how we do it, but the kernel underneath so many of the things that we're celebrating and so many of our rituals is the natural world.
So I have two questions that are a little pointed. The first is, you write about a little bit about rituals that are taboo, like talking about menstruation.
Yeah.
How do you, should certain rituals be off the table for everyone to discuss?
Oh, no. I mean, I think discussing things is good. I'm for discussing everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk about, like, there's a chapter called sex. And I do talk about menstruation, which, of course, you know, getting your period for the first time, that is a coming of age event. And it's a biological change. And we celebrate it in different ways. Sometimes it gets dressed up in different ways. And we're sort of removed from the actual biological part of it, but we're all, it's still all, you know, these coming of age things. And in terms of sex, I mean, one of the most important things for our species, certainly worthy of celebration. And even if it's taboo, I think there's a way to talk about it that is positive.
Second question. So you write about being in a mixed marriage in terms of religion. And you write a little bit about how someone who is one religion might really enjoy celebrating Christmas.
Yeah.
Is there a danger in not being respectful of another religion's religiosity around their particular holiday?
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know that I have the right answer for that because I'm not religious. But of course, I have thought a lot about, you know, if you're extremely devout and, you know, let's say Christmas is the holiest day of the year for you and someone else is celebrating it because it's just wonderful to have lights and presents and a feast when the days are short and the nights are long and dark. There is some tension there. And I don't know what the right answer is. But I do think that whatever you believe, there is a celebration that can reflect your true philosophy.
My guest is Sasha Sagan. The name of her new book is For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. I love the small creatures such as we because there's this sense of sometimes you think everything is happening around you, but then you're really just a dot.
Yes, it's so true. Well, and the
world.
Yeah, totally. And then the world is a dot. I mean, you could zoom out exponentially. But the title comes from a quote from the novel Contact, which is the only work of fiction my dad ever published. And the rest of the line is, "For small creatures such as we, the vastness is bearable only through love." And I found that really moving, and that's where the title came from. And I write in the book about how actually my parents collaborated a lot, and it was my mother who wrote that line.
So when you thought it, when you sat down and you started writing this book, what were some of the connections that you made from the science that your parents instilled in you as a child as you went and explored these cultural surveys and these I guess some of it is unscientific, right? It's not, we're talking about ritual. We're talking about belief systems and philosophies, not data.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, if you sort of, right, when you study a culture, let's say an ancient culture, you know, Greek mythology or something like that, and you're sort of removed from it or you're not, you know, no one's still, like, I mean, as far as I know, like, worshiping Zeus, or a very small number of people, if they are, you know, it's really possible to look at it as this beautiful or, you know, in some cases, terrifying or stirring or emotional tale, you know, like literature. And I found that there was so much beauty that you could look at from a literary perspective. But, you know, beneath almost any mythology, any tradition, you know, like the myth of Persephone is about how spring happens every year. And even if it's not explained by the axial tilt of the earth that we now have information about, it's still a celebration of something that we now have a little more clarity through science about how it happens. And I think the wonder of it shouldn't be reduced because we understand it.
So you having a child was one of the catalysts for writing this. Why?
Oh, because, you know, as my husband and I started to prepare to have a little person, you know, we had to start thinking about how we were going to answer some big questions mm-hmm. that small children ask and what we were going to celebrate and how. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, mixed marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are philosophically aligned, but my background is Jewish, although secular, and his background is Christian. And, you know, I think my perspective is the more celebrations, the better, the more parties, the better. But we also wanted to instill, you know, a sense of the beauty and awe and wonder of nature as revealed by science in a way that wasn't hokey and wasn't like, you know, it's hard to invent something new without it feeling a little contrived sometimes. So it began as an exploration of that, and I think it might be useful because even parents who are religious or, you know, maybe have similar backgrounds, you're still navigating these questions, and there's still going to be some big, big questions that are going to be hard to answer when a little person shows up.
The name of the book is For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. It is by Sasha Sagan. Sasha, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.